Adilila, chapter 12. The chapter is entitled Expansions of Advaita Acharya, and we'll be reading text 71, 72, and 73 responsively. So text 71. Not only the misguided descendants of Advaita Acharya, but anyone who is against the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be considered an atheist, subject to be punished by Yamaraj. Text 72. Be one a learned scholar, a great ascetic, a successful householder, or a famous sannyasi. If one is against the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is destined to suffer the punishment meted out by Yamaraj. Text 73, please repeat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The descendants of Advaita Acharya who are accepted, the descendants of Advaita Acharya who accepted the path of Sri Achyutananda were all great devotees. Purport. In this connection, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya gives this short note. Sri Advaita Acharya is one of the important trunks of the Bhakti Kalpa Taru, or desire tree of devotional service. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a gardener, poured water on the root of the bhakti tree and thus nourished all its trunks and branches. But nevertheless, under the spell of Maya, the most unfortunate condition of a living entity, some of the branches, not accepting the gardener who poured water on them, considered the trunk the only cause of the great Bhakti Kalpa Taru. In other words, the branches or descendants of Advaita Acharya who considered Advaita Acharya the original cause of the devotional creeper and who thus neglected or disobeyed the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deprived themselves of the effect of being watered, and thus dried up and died. It is further to be understood that not only the misguided descendants of Advaita Acharya, but anyone who has no connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even if he is independently a great sannyasi, learned scholar, or ascetic, is like a dead branch of a tree. This analysis by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, supporting the statements of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, depicts the position of the present so-called Hindu religion, which, being predominantly conducted by the Mayavad philosophy, has become a hodgepodge institution of various concocted ideas. Mayavadis greatly fear the Krishna consciousness movement and accuse it of spoiling the Hindu religion because it accepts people from all parts of the world and all religious sects and scientifically engages them in the Daiva Varnashram Dharma. As we have explained several times, however, we find no such word as Hindu in the Vedic literature. The word most probably comes from Afghanistan, a predominantly Mohammedan country and originally referred to as a pass in Afghanistan known as Hindu Kush, that is still a part of a trade route between India and various Mohammedan countries. The actual Vedic system of religion is called Varnashram Dharm, as confirmed in the Vishnu Purana. Varnashram Acharyavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyat Tatosha Karanam. The Vedic literature recommends that a human being following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, the Vedic literature recommends that a human being follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Accepting the process of Varnashram Dharma will make a person's life successful because this will connect him with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the goal of human life. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is meant for all of humanity. Although human society has different sections and subdivisions, all human beings belong to one species. And therefore, we accept that they all have the ability to understand their constitutional position in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms, Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nitya Das. Every living entity is an eternal part, an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every living entity who attains the human form of life can understand the importance of his position and thus become eligible to become a devotee of Lord Krishna. We take it for granted, therefore, that all humanity should be educated in Krishna consciousness. Indeed, in all parts of the world, in every country where we preach the Sankirtan movement, we find that people very easily accept the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without hesitation. The visible effect of this chanting is that the members of the Hare Krishna movement, regardless of their backgrounds, all give up the four principles of sinful life and come to an elevated standard of devotion. Although posing as great scholars, ascetics, householders, and swamis, the so-called followers of the Hindu religion are all useless, dried-up branches of the Vedic religion. They are impotent. They cannot do anything to spread the Vedic culture for the benefit of human society. The essence of the Vedic culture is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya instructed, Yaradeka Tarakaha Krishna Upadesh Amar Agya Guru Hoy Tara Edesh. One should simply instruct everyone he meets regarding the principles of Krishna Katha, as expressed in Bhagavad Gita as it is and Srimad Bhagavatam. One who has no interest in Krishna Katha or the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like dry, useless wood with no living force. The ISKCON branch, being directly watered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is becoming undoubtedly successful. Whereas the disconnected branches of the so-called Hindu religion that are envious of ISKCON are drying up and dying. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamzajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Dapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patiranam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivazadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yaya Layala Sri Achyuta Nandaramat, Sri Acharya Gana Mahabhagavat. The descendants of Advaita Acharya who accepted the path of Sri Achyutananda were all great devotees. So, this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we've just heard that even the sons of some of the sons of Advaita Acharya, although they are directly branches of the tree of devotion, but some of them, as Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, became covered by Maya and did not accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although they accepted Advaita Acharya, but because they didn't accept Lord Chaitanya, then it's described that Lord Chaitanya then ceased to water those parts of the tree, and because of this lack of water, they dried up and became useless branches on the tree, devoid of all life force, impotent, useless. So, Srila Prabhupada makes so many amazing points in the purport, and this section, we can see that as there are number of examples, but even one may becoming in the lineage of such an exalted personality as Advaita Acharya, can be the son of Advaita Acharya and still be in Maya. You can have the direct association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and still fall into Maya. The perfect example is Kala Krishna Das, I think, who was traveling through South India with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in the end, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to rescue him from the Bataharis. You know, this group, he fell into Maya and fell under the illusion of these other persons with the desire to enjoy. So, if a direct descendant, the son of Advaita Acharya, can fall into Maya, and the direct servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can fall into Maya, what do you think about us? I mean, rather, what do you think about me? Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shishi Gauranitai Ki, Krishna Govinda Prabhu Ki. He is everywhere, inside, outside, here and there. So, the other day we were having a discussion with one devotee. Well, actually, as a series of different conversations, someone was explaining how often we register Maya as an external object, something often we blame the external object for pulling us into Maya. Or we say that that is Maya, or this is Maya. We have generalized categories of things that are Maya. But actually, Maya is not necessarily something outside. It is all about what's going on inside. And our consciousness, as Bhagavatam explains in one of the seed verses, what Maya is. Maya is simply one thing and one thing only, and that is Maya is the absence of Krishna. So as soon as Krishna is not present in an activity or in our consciousness when we're trying to do something, then we are in Maya. So the other day in talking with someone, one devotee was explaining how sometimes when they're in the presence of another devotee, then they become very frustrated, agitated, irritated, angry, upset. And this other devotee said, then that is your Maya. And it was interesting because often we don't think of things like that as Maya, right? That's usually not in the list of categories. But is it Maya to see another devotee and not be able to connect them to Krishna and feel some joy? Is that Maya? I don't see heads, some heads. Right. Well, if it's not connected to Krishna, and usually if something's connected to Krishna, then there's, especially with devotees, as far as I'm aware, it's actually considered an offense to see a devotee and not to feel joy. So now what does this mean? It means that actually we are the doers. Often we think we're not the doers, but we are certainly to some extent doers, correct? The jiva is one of the doers. And we have to control our consciousness. That's the whole point of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They were meant to be a society of persons who think about Krishna. And when we look and the eyes or look upon the face of another devotee, we should remember Krishna. Even if that devotee has done something horrible to us. Because the test is not about what that person has done. Krishna will deal with that person. But Krishna is also residing in our heart, and he wants to see how we are going to deal with that person. So for us, that is the test of Maya. Will we allow ourselves, will we allow our consciousness to be degraded to the point where we can't remember Krishna? And that we become disenchanted or discouraged in the presence of another devotee. So this is a great test. I don't know about any of you, but I definitely experience it from time to time. Mainly because we only associate, or at least we're predominantly meant to be associating with devotees, correct? So therefore, in the association of devotees, other devotees are going to become the catalysts for revealing and unveiling our anartas, the unwanted things within the heart. The example that I often give, probably I've given it here before, is like a rock tumbler. Anyone here has ever polished stones? You put them inside of this little cylinder, and the cylinder rolls around like this, and the rocks inside are really sharp when you put them in, and they just knock against one another until they knock off all the sharp edges. So sometimes the association of devotees can be a little bit like that. But it's not really anything to do with the other devotee. It's all about my sharp edges needing to be knocked off. So this idea of Maya, in a further conversation with one devotee, it was mentioned that in a actually different context, sharing this same principle, that we said that it's quite possible that because you're also becoming frustrated, that this is Maya. And the person became so upset. How dare you say that I'm in Maya? And I said, yeah, I must be in Maya. To be thinking that there's a possibility you could be in Maya. What was it one devotee said to Prabhupada? Right, Prabhupada, sometimes I fall into Maya. And Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna consciousness. So the chances are that if we check our consciousness regularly, and actually the Deyato Vishyapum Samsangas Teshu Pujayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Koto Bijayate, that our consciousness is ultimately determining the direction of our life. Everyone would agree? Yes or no? Yes. Because the thoughts are guiding us. They're directing us. Fortunately, in the age of Kali, we're not held karmically responsible for our thoughts. Who here is happy about that? Anyone? I definitely am. So it means that you can think something not so nice or something that's really big Maya, and you won't be held karmically responsible. Who's happy about that? Who likes to think about things like that? Sometimes during japa, right? Anyone's had that experience? During japa, the film projector comes on, and it starts to play these reruns of old scenes from our previous life. And sometimes we think, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare. But sometimes we think, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Let's rewind that one. Hare Krishna. So that's the check of consciousness. Where is my consciousness? At the most important time, at the moment where we're actually meant to be associating with Krishna, we are in Maya. The holy name is rolling off the tongue, and we are actually in Maya. Why? Because our consciousness is disconnecting us from Krishna. So we have to constantly be in check of our consciousness at every moment. And Zonas Sachinandan Maharaj described very nicely about how we recite the 10 offenses. So often we recite them in the, well, we always recite them in the negative tense, right? To blaspheme devotees, you know, of the Lord, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, right? So in this way, we're talking about what not to do. But very nicely, he explains that the positive approach to that is what we should be focusing on to do, right? So to not blaspheme devotees, what should we be doing? Glorifying the devotees. So it's the positive conscious approach to overcoming the 10 offenses. Because if every time you see a devotee, your consciousness goes to trying to think of something positive to say about them, then will you be avoiding the first offense? Yes, naturally. So the whole thing is about pulling our consciousness to the stage where at every moment we're trying to remember Krishna and act in Krishna consciousness. Now, part of me is thinking that this is such a simple idea that I'm really sorry if I'm underestimating the intelligence of everyone. It's just that in my own experience, I realized that most of the time I'm actually not really in Krishna consciousness. I'm in some other kind of consciousness, and I'm not even really thinking about Krishna. At best, I'm in neutral consciousness where I'm not really thinking about Krishna, but I'm not really thinking anything negative either. Does that make sense? Sometimes we drift into very negative thinking, but We have to proactively put ourselves in very positive consciousness of Krishna. And when we do that, we're associating directly with Krishna. So this whole point is about consciousness and how we have to understand how susceptible we are to the illusory energy. But the power is actually in our hands. The example given of the guru whose disciple comes to him and says, you know, Gurudev, Maya's got a hold on me. I can't get free from Maya. Please, you know, I need your mercy, Gurudev, because Maya's holding on to me and I can't get free. I'm, you know, in Maya. And what did the spiritual master do? He ran over, he grabbed hold of a tree, and he said, let go of me, let go of me, let go of me. Because it's not Maya that's holding on to us, it is us that is holding on to Maya. And sometimes we hold on to Maya, and Maya is like a hot coal. And we're getting burned while we hold on to it, but it's almost like we enjoy the suffering, and we just won't drop it. You know, I gave this analogy the other morning, quoting His Holiness Kadambakananda Maharaj, probably one of the first classes he gave it so that I ever heard. And he was talking about how the living entity is so attracted to the illusory energy. And he compared it first to like fire. And he said that we like to play with fire, right? And fire, if used correctly, is very potent. It's very powerful. We can offer yajnas. We can prepare an offering for the Lord. So many things can be done with fire. But if you play with fire, there's a famous saying, if you play with fire, you're going to get burned. And if you play with fire incorrectly, then fire can burn the whole house down. Then he gave another amazing analogy about the potency of Maya. And he explained the analogy of fishing. I won't ask how many of you here have ever been fishing. Probably none of you, except fishing for lost souls in the material ocean. All of you are fishers of men. But fishing is a sport or pastime where people, usually they put a little worm or some bait on the hook, and they throw it in the water, and it's attached to a string and a rod or a pole, and you sit and wait until something starts to nibble. So the illusory energy is kind of like that. Maya Devi puts out lots of bait, and we're like little fishes traversing the material ocean, and sometimes we see something that attracts us or distracts us from Krishna. But it looks so nice. And then sometimes we know that it's a worm and it's on a hook. And if I try to nibble, I'm possibly going to get caught. But what do? Do we turn away? No, we don't turn away, do we? We're just not so intelligent. Actually, we're over-intelligent. We think, ha-ha, if I nibble the worm from the bottom of the hook, I won't get caught. So we approach like this. Try to nibble a little bit. And then the fisherman's rod goes, whoop, whoop. And he's like, oh, I've got a smart fish here. And then we think, now let me try a little from the side. Because at first we might not get hooked. So we think, oh, I got it figured out. But the hook is just waiting. And then at one point we just bite off a little more than we can chew. And boom! The hook goes in. And then it's the struggle, right? Oh no, why did I do that? I knew I shouldn't nibble on the hook. Right? Meanwhile, and you try to run, but you can't run, and you're hooked, and you got it, and now you're caught, and now that's... Anyone has had that experience? Okay. Thank God I'm not the only one. So this is Maya. This is the illusory energy. And we think that we can play with it. We think that we can allow our consciousness to drift away from Krishna and exploit the material energy, right? And try to enjoy separately from Krishna, and then we wind up getting hooked, and then we think, why did I do that? I know better. The famous question, how many people here have ever said, I'm never gonna do that again? Anyone? And who did it again? I won't ask who's still doing it because I hope nobody. But the chances are that we have a propensity and tendency to repeat our foolish activities that lead us into Maya. So, what chance have we got? Every chance. Daivyeshu gunamayi mama maya durajaya. Mameva prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. Krishna says that Maya is very difficult to overcome. Why? Because she is empowered by me. She's mama maya. She's my maya. Not like his maya, but his maya. So she's empowered by Krishna, but we can very easily cross beyond the illusion of maya if we simply take shelter of Krishna. And what does that mean to take shelter of Krishna? It certainly will mean to physically place and prostrate ourselves, but most places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, man mana bhava mad bhakto, mad yaji mam namaskuru. He says we have to put our consciousness, our thoughts on him. We have to remember him. We have to think of him. It is quite possible that we could be doing something that apparently externally seems like maya. Like Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the devotees who go into the bank. And he says you may have two people there, who are both depositing money and exchanging, you know, seems like a business transaction. But for the devotee, it's not maya. Why? Because he's turning in money for Krishna, you know, for the temple that's been collected on Sankirtan or something. But the other person is turning in money that's been collected from God knows where and will be utilized for God knows what. So in this way, the same activity may look like maya, but it's not. Why? Because of the consciousness. So like that. Have I driven that point home enough? Does it make sense? You all already knew it anyway, though, right? But it's good to hear things repeated again, and I definitely need to preach to myself, so I am. Now, I don't know, what time does class finish? 8:30? Saturday? 8:45. So we have a little bit of time. I mean, there are other things to speak because actually I wasn't going to say any of what I just said. But does anyone have any questions, comments, corrections, chastisements, concerns? Sutta Prabhu, you are like the all-knowing oracle. If you ask a question, you'll have to answer it yourself.
Thank you, Jainatai Prabhu, for coming. You're very busy, many responsibilities, but you still came, so thank you.
Thank you.
And as someone with many responsibilities, I think this is a good question to ask you. You are talking about devotee relationships, and it seems we live in a very unique situation whereby devotees are meant to be friends, but they're simultaneously colleagues. We're relating to each other in a very devotional way, and at the same time, we're trying to get things done. And sometimes those two dynamics of being friends and at the same time being colleagues can cause conflict. So I'm just wondering if you can share something about that. Is it that we're supposed to be in a different mentality when we're dealing with each other for service, and that's very natural? Or should we just try to be Vaishnava in both of those roles? Like, should there be a distinction, or should we just be the same? If there is a distinction in how we deal in those two different roles, then how can we ensure that one doesn't compromise the other? Because, you know, if you're trying to get something done with someone and they let you down, then that can affect your friendship. So how to balance these two aspects of a relationship?
Wonderful question. Sounds like I need to write an essay for the GBC College. Nice question. Everyone understood the question? Anyone else has that kind of experience? So my answer, whether it's correct or not, is that, first of all, there's a word used here. The word is gana. Gana. Now, gana in other places means like gang, your crew, your team, to use modern language, your peeps, your people, you know, the people you connect with, the ones you want to hang out with, the ones you want to be with, the people whose chemistry when you're with them is just so natural. Everyone has that experience. There are certain people, certain devotees that we just naturally connect with, correct? Yes or no? Yeah. Naturally, there are just people that we connect with. We feel friendship with. We can just open our heart to them, speak to them, or they can open their heart to us. That is natural. Those personalities, they're probably part of your gana. Right? Just like in the spiritual world, certain gopis hang out together and certain gopis don't hang out together. They have their own gunas. They have their own people that they connect to. And those are our friends. And they will be predominantly less than the rest. It's just a natural thing. There will be less people that we connect with on such a heartfelt platform that we should understand. We should not try to impose some artificial imposition on the fact of the law of nature. That there are less people that we will really be close friends with. But in the spiritual world, everybody is a colleague. Even if they're in your gana. Everyone is a colleague because everybody is working for Krishna. Everyone's in the same business to please Krishna, to satisfy Krishna. So that's something that we all have relationship on. And relationship means that we're able to relate. And how do devotees relate? We relate because we have the same common goal. Even if you're born in a different country with such a different culture, but we have the same commonality. A, first, this body is just temporary. B, I'm a spirit soul originating from Krishna, Jivara Swarupoi, Krishnara Nityadas, and I'm here to try to serve Krishna. So therefore, there are many levels of relationship. You mentioned about, do we act Vaishnava in this one and not in the other one? We should always be Vaishnava. But as Srila Prabhupada said, this is not always an easy thing. Once Srila Prabhupada said, oh, Vaishnava, that is a very high thing. Vaishnava is higher than Brahman. I mean, we sometimes think, yeah, and I'm Vaishnava and Brahman is, but to be actual Brahman is quite an elevated thing. It means you're clean most of the time. You're absorbed in understanding Brahman. You know, we just talked about consciousness. Most of the time, we're not really even connecting to Krishna. But to be Vaishnava means that we want to serve Krishna. So we should try to be Vaishnava in all situations. So, if you're at work and you don't like your boss, means your immediate line boss, but you like the job and you like the money, then what do you do with the boss? Spit in his coffee? No, you tolerate. Trinadapi sinichena, tuodapi sahishana, amanina manadena. We tolerate. We accept the humble position. We understand, actually, that I don't deserve any respect anyway. And at the same time, I should offer our respect. This is why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that we should string this verse on a thread of the holy name and wear it around our neck at all times. Not just with when I'm with my Gana, but when I'm with any Vaishnava. Why? Because in order for the business of serving Krishna to get done properly, we have to cooperate. Cooperate. Co means more than one. And operate means do something. And we're all trying to do something for Krishna. So we have to cooperate. And worst case scenario, in another devotee, we should be able to see that at least this person is trying as hard as it may be in this disgusting material world to surrender to Krishna. They may come with so many faults. Of course, we don't have any faults, but we can see the faults in others. They may come with so many faults, but at least this person is trying to surrender. Let's try to work together. So that's Vaishnava. It means I may not like this about them and I may not like that. Yeah, that's also not a surprise. We don't all like the same things. That's what we consider one of the beautiful things about Krishna, that he's so multifarious and so diverse. You know, unity and diversity. Why can't we get it? Why can't we get how wonderful it is that we're all different, but we're still trying to serve Krishna? You know, sometimes, quite a number of years ago when I was in Soho Street, we were having this kirtan, and I was in the middle of the kirtan spinning around with one devotee who was from Russia. And, I mean, I don't know how old I was at that time, younger than I am now. And he was much older, probably about 20 years older than me. And after I spun around with him, I was thinking, isn't that far out? I'm in London, and my body's originally from America. I grew up towards the Cold War was still on. So hearing all kinds of propaganda about people from Russia. Anyone here from Russia? Oh, really? No one? That's amazing. So, you know, hearing all kinds of things about people from Russia, and I was thinking, here I am, engaged in dancing and chanting with an older man, you know, whom I generally wouldn't relate with anyway, you know, from Russia, and we're just both so happy. And then I looked around the room, and I thought, in this room, there's probably only one person from England, and everybody else is from somewhere else, and there must have been 150 or 200 people in the room. And I thought, this really is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This really is the process and the organization who can bring unity to the entire world. And it's not based on what Srila Prabhupada states in this purport, which is the Hindu idea. Because as Prabhupada said, before him, anyone from Hindu background was only preaching Hindu Dharma to people who looked like Hindus. I often say to people, do I look like a Hindu? Because sometimes people say, oh, you're a Hindu. But yes, depending on the circumstance, if it helps you to relate, then we can go there. But the point is that if you're not able to deliver Sanatan Dharma, which is the eternal Dharma of the Jiva, of the living entity, to everyone, then you've already missed the point. So, are there challenges in working with other people, other devotees? Yeah, you better believe it. But we have to remember that who is really being challenged. We blame the other person, but it's us who've got the problem. As Srila Prabhupada said, why do we perpetually blame the instrument of our own karma? Krishna sends a devotee to help to purify us, and we get upset. Krishna sends someone to highlight an anartha that is keeping us away from him, and we push that away and try to push blame. It's not an easy thing, for a fact. But is it the best thing? Yes. Is it the highest thing? Yes. chanting 16 attentive rounds, is it the highest thing? Yes. Is it the best thing? Yes. How often do we do it? I mean, can anyone here honestly say they can chant 16 complete rounds without their mind deviating from hearing the holy name? I mean, you definitely wouldn't raise your hand anyway because you're on a different platform. But, you know, but does Prabhupada say to do that again and again and again and again and again and again? Yes. So, are we well versed at doing things that seem nigh on impossible? You better believe it. In Kali Yuga, trying to be Krishna consciousness, the odds are stacked against us. But do we persevere? Yes. Why? Because we know it's the best thing. Because we know it's the right thing to do. And Srila Prabhupada says in one prayer we were reading the other day, that Prabhupada says, simply in trying to sincerely perform devotional service, Krishna reciprocates with that. Simply by trying. We only have to simply try, sincerely try to be serious. Will we fail? Yes. So what? I failed at trying to do the greatest thing. So let me try again. And keep trying. You know, there's so many examples of failure. What is his name? Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb. You know, someone said, yeah, but you failed so many times. I forget, what was the exact quote he said? That I didn't fail. Yeah, I just found out 1,000 or 10,000 ways how not to do it. He wasn't deterred. If it doesn't work, try again. If you make a mistake and you offend a Vaishnava, which probably will happen, go, apologize, beg forgiveness, and try to be conscious of the fact that I have a problem with this person that doesn't allow me to be Krishna conscious in their presence. And imagine if you could overcome that. Imagine if you could overcome that. And sometimes it takes a little butting of heads to break through some kind of thing, to have this point where you're like, wow, I really appreciate you. I really respect you. So like that. I don't know if I answered your question or just went off on some kind of weird tangent. Does that give a little bit of something? Okay. Hare Krishna. So I guess we should stop now.